Inconceivable!
Brothers don't shake hands. Brothers got a hug.
Welcome to the Cheap Seats and Stickman Podcast.
Welcome everyone to another fresh edition of Cheap Seats and the Stickman Podcast. We thank you for tuning in. I am, of course, the Stickman, Jose Maldonado, and with me as always is my co-host, my esteemed colleague, Jason Burgos, Cheap Seats. How you doing tonight, man?
Kinshasa!
I take it that you are doing really, really well.
This coffee has gotten me awake, baby. Woo!
This dude is caffeinated up, man. The energy is high tonight. Yeah, I'm for a hell of a show.
I'm excited. I'm always excited to talk old wrestling. It brings a fire and a passion from within me.
Oh, for sure, man. I mean, anybody can go back and listen to our ECW episode. I think they got a real good taste of that, man. Just thinking back to what made us fans in the first place, just really, really gets the juices flowing, man.
Oh,
and
yes.
That's kind of what we got in store for you tonight. Kind of taking a cue from our episode with our good friend Eddie Molina, where we talked about top five comic book movies that were influential to us. Tonight we're going to go the wrestling route, and we're going to talk about top five wrestlers that were influential to us. Basically wrestlers that we were fans of and helped kind of shape us into the fans that we are today. The passionate wrestling fans, and kept that passion, kind of lit that fire inside of us. So Jason, you excited about tonight, man? Your list is shaped up and ship shape.
I really had to think about it, and you know, like we talked about before we started recording, I wanted to try to find guys that weren't so obvious, because I made an honorable mentions afterwards, because there are certain guys that are very obvious that, you know, it was like, oh, this, I wanted to avoid any crossover so we didn't want to have, you know, similar issues like we had on the movie podcast, where, you know, someone's possible number one was given away early, but
that was obviously how it stuck, right?
That hurt me so deeply. I don't want to go back to that. I'm going to leave it alone.
I apologize, good sir. I really thought you weren't going to go that route, but yeah, great minds think alike, man. We synchronized, man. We
exactly. Our minds are like one.
Yes. But yeah, we might have a crossover or two here, but yeah, I thought the same thing as you. Didn't want to go with the two obvious choices. I mean, obviously, you know, there's great wrestlers that everybody was a fan of growing up. But, you know, try to take a different route. I mean, you know, there's one or two that just had to get on the list because they were that influential to me.
Mm-hmm.
But try to think of other things about the wrestling business that I love, too. Just different aspects that make you love wrestling as a whole. It's not just the performance standpoint, but, like, you know, the different characters and, you know, just different effects that different wrestlers might have had at different points in my life. You know, that's kind of the route that I took when trying to put this list together.
Yeah, I totally understand that. You know, that's a fair way to go about it, and it makes sense. I mean, now the key question here is, who's going to unveil their famous, unbelievable list first?
That is a good question, my man. I'll tell you what, I went ahead and got things rolling with the explanation. Why don't you do the honors and get us going with the list, my man?
Ooh, I'm excited.
Yes, follow me.
Now, this one, I think I like this as my... Now, I'm going from 5-1. You know, my final will be the best one. We agree with that, the last, saving the best for last, most influential.
Yes, sir.
Now, my five is very obscure, but not maybe too obscure if you were a fan at the time. My number five, most influential... Coco Beware.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, that's a
yes. And I have notes. I made notes of why, because I know it's going to be like, what, Coco Beware? Who is that? Or what? That guy sucked. You know, you have to go back when he wasn't even at the peak of any kind of popularity. He was just kind of one of the guys. He used to be in the opening of the shows. But for me, I must have been, when I started watching it, I must have been 7-8 years old. You know, this is like late 80s, going to the early 90s. This was the time where I really was big into wrestling. And he was such a unique and very kid-friendly kind of character, in that he comes out, he has, you know, blonde hair, a black guy with blonde hair in the 80s. You know, this is before Meteor Man they were doing it in that movie.
Yeah, you know, he was not down with the Golden Lords. You know?
He comes out with the parrot Frankie on his shoulder. He's doing the parrot wings and everything like that. He has the look. He had like a I made the note. He had all the elements of a fan-friendly 80s wrestler. Specifically, he had funky glasses, sort of akin to Macho Man, colorful clothes that were just a mishmash of all kinds of things, the energetic attitude, the flapping wings, and the pet. You know, it drew me to him. He was so interesting. Also, he was a smaller wrestler, so I've always been a fan of smaller wrestlers as a smaller fellow myself. You know, so he was part of what made a wrestling interesting to me. He was one of the reasons I watched, like, him and even, like, to a lesser extent, a Junkyard Dog along with certain other guys. That's why he was influential to me, because he was so cool as a child that he was part of why I just started watching and loving wrestling in the first place, because of weird, unique characters just like him.
You know what? I can see it, man, with that explanation. And you're right. You know, with the age that you were at the time that Coco B was around, he was totally aimed towards you. You know, he was that, like you said, a kid-friendly act. He was exciting in the ring. You know, he could work his moves. And, yeah, he just had that package, you know, with Frankie the Parrot, like you said. I could see it. I buy that as Coco. Definitely wasn't expecting that, man. So
I knew I was going to shock you with that one. I was excited to unleash it on you.
Well, mission accomplished, my man. You definitely caught me with my guard down. But that's a real good opener, man. All right, so for my number five here, this one's going to be a little more obvious than Coco.
Oh, boy.
But, yeah, right off the bat, I got to say, you know, growing up as a kid in the 80s, you know, with the whole rock and wrestling when that was huge and everything like that. Of course, the biggest man around was obviously Hulk Hogan. Mm-hmm. And as cool as Hogan was, you know, I was a fan of Hogan, loved, you know, doing my training, saying my prayers, eating my vitamins, all that good stuff.
Yep.
There was somebody who I thought was just as charismatic as Hogan, but a far better performer in the ring, and that was Macho Man Randy Savage.
You said charismatic and far better performer, I was like, I know, I wonder who that is.
Yeah, without question, man. You know, Macho Man Randy Savage, that's my number five. Macho Man was next level, you know what I mean? You know, everybody still imitates him to this day. Everybody knows his speaking mannerisms. Ooh, yeah, and all that stuff, you know.
Dig it!
And, you know, he made Slim Jim's famous, you know what I mean? But,
they should almost start like their own Macho Man Rosetta Stone for his promos, because it is a unique kind of nonsense that guy used to spew in his promos. It's the kind of thing that you go back and even watch as an adult, and you're like, I don't know what the hell he's saying, but I like it. I do.
Yeah, man. You know, unique is being very generous. Hey, half the time you don't know what the hell this cat's talking about, but you just know you love it to death. You know, yes. Macho Man. He was must-see TV, whether he was on the mic, in the ring, you know, with Elizabeth by his side. There was only one dude that was big enough to go toe-to-toe with Hogan in terms of popularity at his peak. And, you know, an argument can be made for Warrior when it came along later.
Yeah.
But, you know, Macho Man Randy Savage to me was a better package than Hogan. So I always lean more towards Macho Man than I do with Hulk, and he's my number five.
That guy's fascinating because, I totally get why you put him in. He was influential to me because he, you know, was kind of like the bad guy flip side to a Hulk Hogan and a lot of other guys at that time. And, you know, he had a weird character in that. Him and Elizabeth had this weird, like, domestic battery boyfriend kind of weirdness going on.
Yeah, and it might have been shades of what was really going on with this
advocate. Yeah, so I mean, yeah, it was weird, and then I can totally see why some people it worked, but for me, it was like he was so intense. It was just like, whoa, calm down.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you just look at his neck, it looks like he was ready to pop at any moment.
Yeah, but I mean, it took. Intense. Yeah, yeah, like you said, yeah.
But yeah, no, it worked for me, especially when you got stuff like, you know, the famous Steamboat Savage match at WrestleMania 3,
yes.
His quest to the title at WrestleMania 4. I was totally invested in Macho Man. Even for WrestleMania 5, I was kind of rooting for Macho to beat Hogan, but, you know, of course it wasn't to be. Hogan was going to save the day against heel Macho, but I don't know. I always liked the Macho, even when he was the Macho King, you know what I mean?
It took me until my, you know, teenage years to really appreciate it. I think when I really started to get, like, you know, when I became a Smart fan, you know, around that period, that's where I understood how great he was. And I used to love the Macho Madness version of him at WCW. That was like a cool one to me. But yeah, no, that's a fantastic first fifth pick, and I could totally see it. For me, my fourth pick, this is one where when I really thought about it, I was like, okay, yeah, I think he fits more. He was influential, important. He's, you know, he's so unique, and he's become a special kind of performer. My number four is Chris Jericho.
Wow, Y2J getting love, man.
Because when I go back and think about it, you know, I had to, like, that was a guy that I know the ones that are most influential to me that I really deeply cared about is the ones I really put on this list. And I remember when he debuted in WWE, which to this day is still my favorite introduction ever of a performer, along with one of my favorite ever theme music. Like, from that point on, I really rooted for him. Like, I was, like, hoping the best. Like, I still remember to this day that when he lost to Triple H, when he beat Triple H for the title on the episode of Raw, and then come back for commercial break, he has to give the title back. Like, that was it made me mad. Like, it bothered me and those kind of things. And I had, like, a rooting interest in him. And for one, he was just fascinating to me in that he's similar to, like, my number three, just on a lesser level, in that he was a bad guy that intrigued me. And I was intrigued in his WCW days because I loved, one, the Ralphus stuff, you know, the crazy hair that he would do.
And
one of my all-time favorite just bad guy and WCW moments was this guy going out to the ring with his old school 90s printout and having his whole Man of 1001 holds thing and listing his holds, you know, because he was countering Dean Malenko. Like, those kind of things, you know, were just amazing to me. And he was like the new breed version of, like, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, where he was a small guy, wasn't the traditional look, but he had to break that glass ceiling, and then it's been all, you know, solidified in the last 10 years, where I was saying to a friend a couple days ago who's not even a big wrestling fan anymore, and they were kind of like, yeah, I can see it. And that this guy, if you would have stopped his career at, like, say, 2005 or 2006, you'd be like, he's a great one. You know, he's one that wrestling fans will remember forever. He's probably like a top 25, top 30 all-time performer. But what he's done in the last decade with the CM Punk stuff, the stuff he did on SmackDown where he was working hard to be the real true heel, you know, most bad guys should be, you know, up until now, this stuff with the list, he's arguably a top 10 all-time performer now, and that's part of why he's my number four most influential wrestler.
Nah, definitely. You're not going to get anything up for me from Jericho. Huge Jericho fan as well. He's an honorable mention for me, and we'll get to those later, but Jericho is, like you said, man, this dude has really cemented his place as one of the all-time greats. And, you know, I love that you went back to the old WCW days. You kind of saw shades of what was to come with the list, bringing out, you know, the characteristics and stuff. It always seemed like he was one step ahead, and he still is, you know, one step ahead of the curb.
Yes.
Where he kind of knows how to keep himself relevant. And it's the proof is in the pudding. Dude is like 45, 46 years old, still at the top level in the number one wrestling company in the world. And, you know, he was great in the ring as well, you know, great in-ring performer. But, you know, the characters that he would portray, whether it be as a heel, he always knew what to bring to make himself stand out. And that's really important in the wrestling biz. And Jericho's one of the best at doing that. So definitely great choice, man.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So for my number four, I started thinking about all aspects of the wrestling business. And this is where I was kind of touching on earlier, where one of the big things in the wrestling business is a good heel. So you know, you obviously want somebody to boo, somebody to go against the baby face and want to root against. But when I was small, I started to think back to the heels that really, really made an effect on me in terms of, like, literally terrifying me as a little kid.
And there were some good ones back in the day.
Oh, for sure, man. You think back to cats like Abdullah the Butcher, to Vader when he was, you know, a heavy heel. There was a lot of cats, even Taker when he was a bad guy.
Yeah.
But one that really, really got to me as a little kid and really terrified me was Cactus Jack.
Really? I thought you were going to say Jake the Snake. I didn't really see too much Cactus Jack back in the day. I didn't watch too much WCW. I'm curious on why he's on your list.
Yeah, you know, I was a big WCW kid growing up, you know, even more so than WWE during that era. And Cactus really did it for me, man. And I think that it was the level of commitment that he brought to it. There wasn't any other heel like him. Like, you know, they brought him into feud with Sting, their number one babyface. And right off the bat, I'm like, who is this crazy cat that just is relentless? You know, and Cactus would do things that nobody else would do. You know, the storied history of Foley kind of being banged up and stuff. That was all evident in the WCW days. Dude was diving onto concrete, you know, the bang bang, the twisted facial mannerisms, just everything that he brought to it really, really got to me because there was no one else like him. In kind of the cartoony era of the WWF back then and the WWE now, there wasn't any heel like him on that side. And when you go to WCW, you had the cocky heels and the traditional heels, but no one like Cactus. Cactus to me was like a next level type of heel. And you know, you mentioned Jake the Snake, the same kind of thing he was going on in WWF with his angles with Undertaker and Macho Man and everything. Cactus was kind of doing that in WCW, but completely unhinged. Mm. Like this dude, you know, I think about if I ran into him in an alley, he had no qualms about putting me down and putting me to sleep. And as a kid, that really, really got to me. And we saw what Mick Foley became, you know, later on, the type of performer that he was, you know, the level of commitment that he brought to everything, whether it be in ECW, as Mankind, even as Dude Love, you know, dude, you know, really committed to that. It started early with Cactus, man, and you could tell that he was going to stand out from the crowd, and he definitely did to me as a 10-year-old kid watching this kid, you know, go after Sting. Cactus terrified me, so he's my number four.
Yeah, I like I said before, I didn't watch WCW much at all, but by the time I started to watch it, it was long after he had already become Mankind. Like, Mankind was my first introduction, so even if you had said Mankind, I would have been like, you know, for the same idea, I wouldn't have been shocked because he was crazy too. Like that, I remember when they introduced him and seeing him pull his own hair out of his head, I was like, what the hell is this? This guy is crazy. And the screeching, talking, but, you know, after reading his book when it came out, you know, years ago, that's when I really started to appreciate the WCW stuff, all the stuff you just mentioned. Like, I had not known about it until I read it from him, and I could see why he was so different and interesting, especially, like, diving onto some men with these elbows and everything like that. I just watched that. I bet that was like, what is going on here?
Sure, man. I mean, for whatever weird reason, when I was a kid, I just happened to be more into WCW than I went into WWF, at least for a small window of time. Like, I would get – this was when WCW was doing even more pay-per-views than WWF was. They had, like, Halloween Havoc. They had, you know, Great American Bash, Ball Brawl, all that stuff. So I would order those instead of like WWF just because there was more of them. And Cactus was real prominent in the storylines and scared the hell out of me when I was that age, man. I ain't even going to lie.
fascinating. I mean, and even if you wanted to broaden it to his whole career like you just did, it's unbelievable the kind of career he had with the tool set he had.
Foley, I'm sorry. Yeah, just one last point on that. Yeah, Foley wasn't meant to be a superstar, but you know, he broke through, and a lot of that is that level of commitment he brought to it, man. So yeah,
my number three is pretty much like the anti Mick Foley. And he's up here because there was a time where, you know, back in the day when the funds were kind of tied with Mom Dukes and we couldn't afford cable anymore. We lost cable for a long time. This happened to me a couple times in my life. And in those times, that's where I lost interest in wrestling. You know, we weren't watching it anymore. I had, you know, distanced myself from it, wasn't watching it anymore. And when that time came that I started getting interest in it again, there was one obvious guy that he drew my interest, and that guy was Stone Cold Steve Austin. But Stone Cold Steve Austin is not my number three pick. He's actually in my honorable mentions. Stone Cold brought me back to, you know, watching wrestling. The guy that made me stay and had such an aura to him that I could not look away was the great one, The Rock.
Okay.
I remember going down to my cousin's house, watching an episode of Raw, you know, getting back into it, having, you know, no Stone Cold, no some of the characters, and then I saw this guy with his out-of-control shirt, these glasses, he's talking a bunch of trash. It was, like, right heading into his feud not his feud, but his match with Triple H, ladder match at SummerSlam, which was like a great feud, and that was a great match. And you know, I was just mesmerized by him. He was so different. Like he was kind of like Ric Flair, but not. It was like almost like a cool hip version of Ric Flair. I mean, it was mesmerizing, and he was another one. And that's how I really helped me pick the list of guys that, you know, I started to have a personal interest in their success, even though it's a predetermined world. And, you know, when I remember when he became good and then he swerved us all, but became the corporate champion, I still loved him. And then when he finally came good, you know, I was just, he had superstar status, that he's one of the few guys with Stone Cold that really met, you know, Hulk Hogan levels of popularity. And he had a moment that's similar to my number one, eventual number one pick, that he had a loss that literally made me mad. Like, even though this is all predetermined and there's no reason to get mad, like, I got straight up mad when he lost in that Fatal 4-Way at WrestleMania 2000, which should have been his moment, where he won in the main event and then Triple H won because Vince, you know, swerved everybody and everything. Yep. And
you're
that,
absolutely
like,
right on that, man. I remember being pissed
so
about that as well.
Mad.
It made no sense.
Same thing. Like, and then it happened the next year. He loses Stone Cold with the Vince McMahon swear. It was like, ah, just give him his moment. But, you know, he followed that up with, you know, maybe the one of the greatest moments ever by beating Hogan, and that just epic, unbelievable. But, yeah, he just – and also – what was like similar to Jericho, he was the bad guy that made me, you know, that grabbed my interest. And he also, he's a guy that pretty much changed the industry forever, in that, for better or worse, you know, he forced the promo to be the forefront of making a guy a superstar. Now, to the point where if a guy can't cut a great promo, you wonder if he's ever going to reach his, you know, levels of greatness that you feel he can. But there's a set, you know, style and standard that the company has altered, you know, how they think things because of him. You know, the way he broke the mold of what's supposed to be a superstar, you know, guys like a Cesaro, they're not The Rock, and if they don't become The Rock, you wonder if they'll reach that level. And if Roman Reigns has to be like The Rock, you know, talking when he probably shouldn't, you know, all those kind of things. But anyway, you know, that's why he's my number three, just a game-changer, unique, one-of-a-kind guy.
No, yeah, absolutely, man. You know, The Rock really did change the game. Rock is a once-in-a-lifetime talent, and the proof is in the pudding. Look at the levels of success he reached now in the hot, you know, over there in the movie industry, and with TV shows with Ballers over there on HBO, man. Yeah, the Rock was next level. Like, The Rock, there was nobody else like him. And you're right in the fact that, you know, now you look at, you know, Vince's kind of template of what he wants in a superstar. That's The Rock. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at the template, you know, the number one superstar in the company is expected to be just like The Rock. He's yep. the equivalent of a four quadrant movie where he has it all. You know, he's good in the ring. He's, you know, great on the mic. He has that charisma. He has the look. He's the total package. And yeah, absolutely no question, The Rock is one of the all-time greats and you know, a keystone of maybe WWE's most successful era, the Attitude Era. So totally feel you on that, man.
Yeah,
so for my number three, this one's a little more of an obscure pick, kind of like your Coco Beware. This is my Coco Beware.
Ooh.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, us being the wrestling fans that we are, obviously we're great fans of great performers in the ring. There's been a lot through the years, you know, with that kind of that high-flying style, like, you know, Eddie Guerrero, the Rey Mysterios, that kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And early on, you know, I mentioned that I was a more of a WCW kid for some of my formative years. And the one that really did it for me during that era was Flying Brian Pillman.
Ah, this is better. This is better obscure than Coco. This is a highly respected, you know, level, you know, of talent. So I can respect this a lot. I like this one.
That's true. I mean, you know, Pillman, you know, obviously, you know, taken far too young, 35 years old when he died, and still, you know, highly regarded amongst his peers. You still hear, you know, some of the wrestlers talk about him, you know, during his days with the Hart Foundation. But early on, he was that white meat baby face over in WCW, and he had that high flying style. And that was my first introduction to it. He's kind of doing what Owen Hart was doing with the Blue Blazer gimmick.
Yeah, and that was a guy that influenced me. I still love the Blue Blazer.
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. You know, yeah, you know, as corny as that gimmick, you know, as much as they played it off with jokes later on, Blue Blazer was awesome when mm-hmm. we were kids. And Flying Brian was awesome in WCW. He was putting on matches that nobody else was putting on. He was like Next Level, and I just remember some of his feuds, like with Z-Man, Tom Zink, and especially with Jushin Thunder Liger.
Yeah, I always hear about that match.
Oh my God, Super Brawl 2, that match was, it blew my mind. I'd never seen anything like it. It was the mix of the Japanese style with the American style, and it's something that we would see for years to come with the Cruiserweights in WCW. We see a lot of that now with like Ring of Honor, obviously in New Japan, even in WWE with the Cruiserweights with 205 Live. And for me, it all started with Flying Brian. I was a huge fan of his because he was putting on matches like nobody else, man. So, and you know, he had that great character too, you know, a lot of energy. Getting everybody riled up. So, you know, even on the top of the card, there were the heavy hitters. Flying Brian was on the undercard really doing it for me, man. So he's my number three.
And also an old school teammate of one, Stone Cold Steve Austin, the Hollywood Blondes, which is still bugged out to, like, when you see footage of those two together, it's like, wow. You know, it's kind of like looking at an actor that's like, you know, you see it, Sam Jackson in New Jack City. You're like, that's Sam Jackson? He's running the arcade in this movie? What? You know, you go back, you see the Hollywood Blondes, like, that's Stone Cold with blonde hair? Man,
I love the fact that you brought that up. I completely forgot about that era, but you're right. The Hollywood Blondes were so cool during that time. And if you listen to Austin talk, man, Pillman taught him so much about, you know, presentation and kind of, you know, working the crowd. And, you know, Austin gives a ton of credit to Pillman. It just goes to show the kind of performer he was and the impact he had on the industry. And it's crazy to see those two, you know, future legends kind of starting off, you know, Stone Cold with hair, with blonde hair, you know, and kind of healing it up like something The Rock would do. But, Pillman was great during that era, even before and beyond, man.
And then, I mean, like I mentioned before, there was that time where I had gotten away from, you know, wrestling. I wasn't able to watch it. And it, unfortunately, one of those periods were the whole Hart Foundation period with him, which I wish I would have saw. But even during that period, going back, I even know about now, he you know, I think that's why they talk so much about him in the Hollywood Blonde Stoke, because he had a great feud with Stoke, even though despite he was nowhere near the talent he was. I think he had like some kind of major like leg injury at one point. That's what could really curtailed it. Was it a leg injury or a back injury that kind of curtailed his career?
I think it was a back injury. Oh, I think that's what got him on the painkillers, which unfortunately ended up playing a factor in his death. But it was a real shame. Yeah, you said he wasn't the performer that he used to be. But even then, him and Austin had enough of a personality to carry that.
With the voice and
very notorious skit in his house where he pulled a gun and everything.
That's what I was getting to, because you know that was a bugged out moment. Like what? You got guns on WWE TV? Like the cops are showing? What is going on? Like it was totally controversial. I mean, but yeah, he even despite him being like probably 60% of the guy he once was, like that voice, that look, that style, I think he was dubbed the Loose Cannon, right?
Yeah, the Loose Cannon, Brian.
He really was. Like, he did not fit the mold of the Hart Foundation whatsoever, but he was what made the Hart Foundation fascinating, because you had these kind of, you know, basic kind of characters that they all interesting, but they weren't very colorful, and he brought so much color to what could have been a very bland group, you know, and that's what was so great about him and all the things he did. Yeah, so he's one of those guys that, you know, you will look back and are like, whoa. I mean, you know, like a famous, you know, athlete that you'll remember, like, Howard Johnson, like, or, you know, that wasn't a great player or something like that, but, oh, he was good in the Mets. I remember he was good. Like, he didn't get the fame, and he wasn't up there for various reasons, but he's a guy that's, if you were a diehard, you remember, go, oh, man, yeah, Brian Pillman, he was special.
Yeah, for sure, man.
And now, getting down to the top two. Now, these are big. Now,
ooh, yeah.
My top two is total... you know, got, you know, into my heart. Now, he's not as much as into my heart as number one. I mean, he probably is, but, you know, when you're adult, it ain't quite the same. You know, you're like, okay, this is fake. You can't take it seriously, whatever. But, again, now, there was two periods in my life where I had kind of gotten away from wrestling. It was that time, like, in the late 90s, early 2000s, or more like late 90s, where I gotten away, wasn't having cable, you know, Miss Howe Foundation, or a lot of NWO stuff. That came back. Then it was a period where the wrestling started to go downhill, and you had things like Katie Vick and all this nonsense, and you had Vince McMahon going out to the ring in the Royal Rumble and tearing quads. You had Kevin Nash breaking a leg or whatever. I mean, wrestling just got tired and terrible.
There were some dark times. They were.
Yes, they were. And even though it was in the periphery for me, I followed, this man made me, like, bam, I'm back into wrestling. Like, he was the only one I really liked watching, and then when he finally got into the limelight, it made me care about wrestling again to the where I am now, where I still deeply care about it. That man is one CM Punk.
Ah, yes.
He was just unbelievable. I mean, he fit the mold of what is the all-time untraditional kind of character, look, wrestler. You know, he's cut from that cloth. He's just not your normal kind of guy. You know, he didn't have he wasn't a physical specimen, but if there was anybody that had it factor, and it wasn't necessarily about their straight-up surface look, it was him. And not to say he wasn't in good shape, he was in good shape, but he was so unique, and there was something about him, man. The guy has swagger, you know, that's one guy you look at, that guy got swagger. Like, you can feel the passion in him, like the love of what he was doing, and he didn't give a damn if you were down with it or not. He's gonna do it. He knows what he was doing, and he knows how to entertain you even if you knew it or not. But I mean, he was also he was like the champion of a new breed of kind of wrestling fans that cared about, you know, technique and technical stuff and the independence and, you know, who deserved it and who has merit and who's worked the hardest. And he was that kind of guy. I mean, but he also was a total package. He could wrestle. He can cut a filthy promo so that he can get the diehard who appreciated what he was doing in the ring, but he can get the casual fans who didn't get that, and all he had to do was say a couple of words and draw them in. I mean, he had a great, cool style, and I always like a person that has cool ring gear. You know, that's why I like Jericho. You know, that's why I'm a fan of guys like Rey Mysterio or Eddie Guerrero. I always loved the putting work into making cool ring gear, having new ring gear, not wearing the same yellow trunks and boots every day for like 20 years.
Seriously, man. You know? I can imagine what his closet looks like.
Yeah, like I always, because, you know, that was, he knew the nuances of a character, and part of the nuances was staying fresh. Even if you watch him over the years, when he changed, kind of like when he went from heel to face, good to bad, he would change his hair, or he would cut his beard, or he would grow a beard, or he would do all these little things, and it was part of why I appreciated him so much. And, you know, there will be few moments that I, you know, look back on with such admiration and love than when he beat John Cena at Money in the Bank in Chicago, man, when everybody thought he was leaving the company. I mean, those kind of moments are part of why I love being a wrestling fan. That total shock, didn't expect it. You think you read the internet, you know what's going to happen, and then it doesn't happen that way. It's also one of my biggest what-if kind of things, because despite it, he, you know, still going on a long reign as champion and doing real well, it still is like a big missed opportunity of what he really could have been if they fully had gotten behind him as the face of the company. But, you know, that's neither here or there. He's my number two, CM Punk, just, you know, one of the greats of all time, and just a beloved figure for me as a wrestling fan.
That match at Money in the Bank against John Cena is the closest WWE has come to the fever pitch that the NWO and Stone Cold caused during the heyday of the Monday Night Wars.
Yes.
The energy in that arena and just watching it on pay-per-view was crazy. It was just crazy, and it was because of that, because of CM Punk, the performer that he was. You know, obviously the pipe bomb promo that everybody that has become famous now.
Classic.
Led up to that, you know, he just kind of dropped it. It was one of those Monday Night Raw moments that is like, is this really happening? Is he mentioning all this stuff on air? You know, the Paul Heyman.
I'm sorry, Nicole Cabana. I forgot to mention that. Yeah, I mean, that's up there to me. That's up there with Austin 316 promo.
It's absolutely. It's one of those sound bites that'll live on, you know, in WWE lore as one of the great moments. And you're absolutely right. CM Punk, you know, he was the kind of performer that you can count on to knock it out of the park no matter what was thrown his way. You look at him, you know, when he was trying to get the ECW brand going when WWE rebooted that, when they put him in the Straight Edge Society, which was such a cool gimmick that didn't get, you know, enough play. Whether he was a heel, whether he was a face, and then, you know, when he just became CM Punk, straight up total, going against the grain, going against the authority, he was just the, you know, most electric guy on television, man. And to boot, he was a hell of a performer too. So
yeah, he was a guy that he was not physically gifted, say like a Seth Rollins or Randy Orton, but he maxed out what he could because of his passion. I mean, this is why he's a very close, you know, second to my number one. But I love people that make me remember, like they touch me so much in specific little moments that are forgotten about by a lot of other people, but they had, like, again, the nuance of it. Two of it stick out to me. One is when he was at the, you know, the height of the CM Punk powers, when everybody was starting to hop on board. There was a lot of bandwagon jumping, including things like ESPN to this guy. But when he cuts a promo with Triple H on an episode of Raw, I think it was Raw or SmackDown, and he just straight up says, "This is Phil Brooks talking to Paul Levesque." And I was like, this dude just went real life on this. What? You know, like those kind of moments. And the other one was a little smaller, not as like shocking, but I remember, again, one of his great promos, he cuts a promo on John Cena, and he calls John Cena, the Boston native, the New York Yankees. He calls him, you are the New York Yankees of wrestling. And it's like, oh. And then on the pay-per-view match after that, my man, again, going back to changing your outfits and gear, he comes out in pinstripe gear.
Loved it. Loved it so much.
You know, he's from Chicago. He's not a Yankee fan. He's a Cub fan. But he again, caring about the little things and sending a message. Like, you don't have to send a message just only with words or what you do in the ring. It could be your gear or a little thing here and there. You're like, he made me appreciate those little things about wrestling and doing stuff like that. And that's why he was just so mind-blowing to me. Like, he's also one of the few guys that if you look at this, you know, latest run by Brock Lesnar. With Brock Lesnar, this has been a great run for him. He's had a lot of great moments. Mm-hmm. He's one of the few guys that has gotten a good match out of him.
Yeah,
you know, like sure, there's been the Dean Ambrose match was just okay. You know, there was a couple of matches. Like the Roman Reigns was pretty solid. You know, one of his great ones is it was him, Roman, and Seth. You know, but him and CM Punk and Brock, that was one of the few matches where Brock really was willing to sacrifice and give a little. And like CM Punk looked good despite being completely physically outmatched. That was a good match. And he only lost because Paul Heyman interfered, which, again, of the matches he's had, Brock has dominated and pretty much won cleanly against all-timers. CM Punk, they set it up that he got cheated out of beating Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, and I think the reason they had such a great match is because they're kind of the same mindset where, you know, a lot of people live for the WWE. They don't. You know, Brock has made his intentions clear, and Punk, obviously, you know, not being in the UFC and the unceremonious breakup he had with WWE, they were just kind of two dudes trying to prove that they can make it, you know, regardless of what WWE throws at them. And that was a hell of a match, man. And you know, Punk is it's crazy, this dude, you know, the level of intensity he brought. And you know, you hit it right on the money where he wasn't the most physically gifted guy, but the level of passion that he brought to it, just he was kind of like a Mick Foley where he exceeded what was expected of him.
Yeah.
And bonus points, you know, in my humble opinion, when he was feuding with The Rock, you know, leading into WrestleMania, when Rock was about to go with Cena, CM Punk's one of the only dudes that, to me, outdid The Rock on the mic.
Yeah.
Not all the time, but there were one or two promos there where I'm like, all right, Punk's the winner tonight.
Yeah,
and that's rare to say with somebody the caliber of The Rock, but Punk outdid him on the mic a few times.
There was a classic, your arms are too short, with box with God. You know, he did that to him.
Yes.
You know, like, I mean, the Rock, you know, that's the funny thing about The Rock. When he came back second time around, you saw the flaws in his promos. Like, oh, he's going to say silly things like strudel and, you know, the monkey nuts or something like that.
Yeah, I think you mentioned not too long ago that even New Day kind of outshined him on the mic one of the times.
Yeah, and I remember when, you know, his feud with John Cena, I was like, damn, man, I'm going for The Rock, but John Cena is beating The Rock here in the promos. But, you know, but it still goes to your point. Like, in the end, the crowd, The Rock's the legend. So The Rock can just, you can say everything right, and it's all facts, and just rip him apart, but he just says monkey nuts, and it's like, oh, The Rock got you.
Yep, you know, and he got plenty of catchphrases to fall back on.
Yeah,
so there's always
but
that,
like, you know? Guys like Cena and Punk, even though they were in there in the hurricane of the moment with this legend, they completely held their own and in the end probably turned the crowd to them because they were able to tell the truth or just be so unbelievably talented that The Rock's greatness could not stand up to what they were doing. And you're right. I mean, he did. He made that feud great because The Rock was pretty much doing part-time work, and he was the one pushing it. And that's part of why Punk left, because he had to drop the title to him, and, you know, he left in that pay-per-view. You know, he was doing all the work for a guy that was doing half of it, but...
Salt in a Wound, where they introduced the new WWE title after Punk dropped it and, you know, gave it to The Rock.
Yeah, you know, but he had so many great moments, like his feud with Chris Jericho in WrestleMania, you know, the stuff with The Rock, the stuff with John Cena, getting over on John Cena a lot of times. I mean, yeah, I remember his feud with, like, The Undertaker and SmackDown was a bit. I mean, he had so many cool-ass, awesome moments. I mean, he was there when they introduced The Shield, you know, all those... really epic things, man. He just unbelievable. But, you know, we're getting far off. I want to know who your number two is on the list.
Well, my number two is one of these dudes where, you know, we touched on it earlier with the WWF, what they were doing in the 80s, the over-the-top characters like Hogan, Savage, and then you got cats like, you know, Honky Tonk Man, Brutus the Barber, Beefcake. It was that kind of presentation, and it was fun, and it was cool. But over on the other side of the coin, over in the WCW and NWA, there was one guy on top doing things that were just next level, considered maybe the greatest of all time. Definitely influential to me as a kid, because I'm like, all right, this dude is like no one other, and that's Nature Boy Ric Flair.
Interesting. All
right. Yeah, I was a big Flair fan growing up. Big fan of the Four Horsemen. To me, the Four Horsemen were the coolest thing going. They had the kind of the revolving door going for a little bit, but it was always usually Flair, Tully, Arn, and whoever the fourth guy was, whether it was Luger, Wyndham, which was probably the best iteration of it. But Ric Flair at the top, and Ric Flair was the dude with the sunglasses, the suits, the jet riding, limousine flying, kiss stealing, wheeling, dealing. Flair was doing things that I didn't see anybody else do in terms of the performer he was in the ring, because he was a heel, a real cocky heel.
Understatement.
I mean, it doesn't get much cockier than, you know, things like, you know, my shoes cost more than your house. He would drop lines like that, you know, on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was nobody that could touch him on the mic. And then you see him in the ring. And this dude, no matter who he was in the ring with, it could be dudes that you know, you watch them one week and it's like, oh, God, that dude is terrible. But he gets in the ring with Flair. And Flair can bring a 5-star match out of anybody in his prime. And I always appreciated that about Ric Flair. He kind of made me appreciate what it takes to make a good match. You know, especially now as an adult thinking back, you know, kind of the fan that I am now of performers started with Flair. And my number one, which we'll get to. But, you know, Ric Flair was doing things that was, it was amazing. You know, whatever style, if he was working with Ricky Steamboat, he worked that kind of a style. You know, if he was working with Sting, who he actually, you know, if you talk, you know, if you, you know, go back to wrestling lore, Sting was made when he fought Flair at Clash of the Champions 1. The 45-minute Broadway, you know, that made Sting a star. And that's what Flair did with anyone. He put, you go down the list, the Lugers, Barry Windham's, Sting, Dusty Rhodes, Harley Race, all these legends that he was in the ring with, Flair just shined like a diamond, man. And, you know, there's a reason he's regarded as one of the greatest of all time. And even as a kid, I was able to pick up on that, man. Flair's my number two.
He's similar to me and like Macho Man. Like I had to appreciate him when I got older, because as a kid, again, intense. It was so intense. I was like, whoa, I don't know about limousines and jet ride. I don't know about women. Come on, whoa, I'm young. I'm like 10 years old. But, you know, he same thing. And he's funny to me because, you know, yeah, he was an old-timer. He used to put on these great matches. But he used to do things that – he used to do the same ludicrous moves – all the time, but it worked, you know, and it wasn't like a, you know, so much like
the I don't think he ever landed a successful move off the top rope, but Lord knows he'll try every match.
That, or like, you throw him into the corner, he flips around, and he's on the other side of the rope, and you can knock him down, you know, that, or the face, no, you know, all these things, like, so stupid, but it just worked, it was great, like, it was part of the entertainment factor, and that's what wrestling is. It's entertainment factor. You know, that, and that's what made him different than what's going to be my number one. That's probably why both of them had friction, is because he was entertainment factor mixed in with the great technical wrestling and ability and everything like that. And yeah, just he's so amazing because he stretches across so many eras. Yes. You know, he stretches across from the Freebirds, to Sting and Hogan, to the NWO, to DX, to the
Evolution, you know?
Yeah, you know, I mean, he always still very talented, like, even down to his last match with Shawn Michaels. It's a good match, and this guy's, like, 50 years old.
Yeah, man, I am, you know, honored to say that I was actually there the night for WrestleMania 24 when he fought Michaels.
Oh, wow.
And you could feel it in the air, man. I mean, this was something special that we were watching. Him coming out with that glorious blue robe, the fireworks, the pyro. We all knew what was going on. This was going to be his curtain call, his last match. But you could just feel it that this was one of the all-time greats, still able to perform at a high level. And it was just, you know, it crazy intense to see that in person. And, you know, like you said, it's just because of his storied past. He stretched across so many eras. You know, you go down the list of legends that he's fought with, man, he was there for all of that, man. And, you know, to see it come to an end that night, that was super special, man.
Now, my number one is he's like he's not the opposite of Ric Flair, but he's a very different. He's really like a B-side, not like in a bad way. Like he's like a mirror flip. And I'm wondering if he's going to be your number one based on something you said earlier, but we're going to see.
I think he is.
so we can just...
If there was going to be an overlap, I thought this might be it. And if I'm right, I'm pretty sure. Anyway, go right ahead. Good.
Now, my number one, he became my number one. You know, matter of fact, this makes me think there were three periods when I got away from wrestling. It was like the Hulk Hogan era, and I got away and got back in with this guy. Then I got away, and I got back in with Stone Cold Rock. Then I got away, got back in with CM Punk. But this is the first time where I started becoming the quote-unquote smart fan, and he was the guy that helped me, you know, say, okay, that's good wrestling. Oh, that's, you know, realize, oh, this is a strategy, and, oh, you know, telling a match as if it's real life, you know, like, there's a strategy. Like, he's going to work the leg. He's going to work the arm. You know, there's a strategy. It's like trying to make it a blending the lines of real and fake. And my number one guy is Bret the Hitman Hart. Is that your
yes,
number one?
Sir. That is my number one, man. I tried to avoid it, but I couldn't, man. I'm pretty sure Bret meant as much to me as he did to you, good sir. Bret's super influential, man.
Now, let's see. Like I mentioned with The Rock, that The Rock had the second moment where I literally got pissed. I don't know about you, but when he lost to Shawn Michaels in an Iron Man match for that bullcrap tie and Gorilla Monsoon came out, I got mad. Like, I'm not watching wrestling anymore. This is ridiculous.
I will say I wasn't upset that night. I liked Sean, too, when he's an honorable mention to me. I kind of like that he had his moment, but I could see why you would be upset with that, especially with Bret being who he was, you know?
I got mad. I'm like, dude, he had him in a sharpshooter. It was over. Y'all stopped the clock. They're digging us. Who's going to win
that
match?
Oh, my God. And let me just say real quick, the booking to that match is one of the most brilliantly booked matches for the fact that they gave them 60 minutes and they were still zip-zip.
Yeah.
That was such a smart move because it showed that whether it was an Iron Man match or not, these two were just that awesome.
And that's great. That's why I liked when they the second Iron Man match, which with Rock and Triple H, they did the opposite. It was like it was like a final fall of like 4-5 or something like that. But right. You know, yeah, because that first one it was like the wrestling version of the pitching duel, you know, or the defensive battle. It was unbelievable, and like the pace, and like that was one of those matches that made me appreciate, well, okay, this is wrestling, and maybe get what they're doing, and like, okay, they got to pace themselves, like this is hard work, you know, this is a lot of stuff to do, they got to find those moments to rest, and you know, and like how they told the story, like you go back and watch it, yeah, it's a long watch, and there's parts of it where it's like, it's kind of boring, but there's a reason to it, there's a method to the madness, and that final like 5 minutes is it's so built the intensity because it's like a flurry of all this craziness and you know unbelievable, man. I mean he was the guy wearing pink and he was still badass in a time where it's like you weren't pink. I don't know about what we weren't pink. You know, it was a different kind of thing. You know, I don't know about you, but I was the kid who wished. Damn, man, I wish I was in the front row to get Bret's glasses.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I was so envious of those kids, man. Wanted the pair so bad.
I hated those kids like I hated kids on Double Dare. Like, I want to be on Double Dare, too. I want Bret's glasses, too, you know?
Dude, we had very similar childhoods, man. We had similar wavelengths with
that. That's why we're brothers. You know, and, you know, just... He was like the... He was just... I mean, the technical wrestling... you know, the psychology of it, like I mentioned before. Again, he was a guy that he had a charisma. He wasn't a speaking charisma. It wasn't like a CM Punk or the Rock, I mean, or the Hogan. You know, mm-hmm. It was a charisma to him that he had this likability. He had a warmth to him. That's why he was like the perfect goody-goody in the last era of goody-goodies. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he had like a warmth. There was a likableness, but it wasn't goody-goody in that it was like Hogan and holding the kids kind of over the top, you know, fresh white bread. He had edge. Yeah. He had swag. He'd come out with the leather jacket like, yeah, I'm the man. Yeah, I'm the champ. I earned this, you know. So that was what was great about him, too. He was not anti-hero. He was like in the middle, you know. It was so amazing. He, you know, just so fun to watch. I still, you know, look fondly on like the matches with like Diesel and Undertaker, because yeah. The strategy, like, he's going to chop down the big man, he's going to work the leg, you know. And him versus Undertaker was mind-blowing, because it was when Undertaker was on fire as a good guy. It was one of the rare times, for a first time in a long time, they had a good guy versus good guy match. And, mm-hmm. you know, they had such amazing matches. Another one, you know, I'll stop right here so you could take over more on him. But I remember his matches with Mr. Perfect. I remember that match with Mr. Perfect, second round, King of the Ring. Yep. Unbelievable. And then, like, I totally bought in. Like, I think he fought Doink in the first round. Really good match, surprisingly, with Doink. He fights Mr. Perfect in his classic in the second round. That bum, Bam Bam Bigelow, gets a bye to the final. He gets to fight Bam Bam in the finals on a bye. And I was, like, so – I was amazed. And then Jerry Lawler effed it all up. Because I didn't even know who Jerry Lawler is. I was like, who is this guy jumping Brett? What is
That's
this?
Right.
Making me mad.
Coming straight out of Memphis, man.
Yes.
Now, you're right on that, man. And it's so funny that you mentioned the Mr. Perfect match at King of the Ring, because the match that did it for me was actually against Mr. Perfect, but at SummerSlam 91.
Yeah.
That was the first pay-per-view I ever ordered in my life. And that match right there was an eye-opener to me, for the same reasons that you said. Brett was a thinking man's wrestler. And, you know, and the way that Hogan, like you said, was an over-the-top kind of baby face, like, you know, tons of energy. Brett was cool. It was cool to like Brett. You know, he just had this aura to him, the swagger to him. And, you know, he'd be in the ring just busting out these moves. He was so smooth in the ring. Smooth as silk. And, you know, in the similar vein of Ric Flair, where it's like, you know, a lot of the moves were coming. That whole sequence of doom at the end where, you know, he'd drop the elbow off the second rope.
Yep.
He'd kind of do the leg drop between the groin, kind of start working the leg.
The bulldog.
Right. You know, you knew the moves that were coming, but, you know, once that sequence was coming, you know, Brett would set it up. And the rest of the match would be different depending on who he was fighting. Like you said, with the bigger guys,
he'd
be fighting Taker, he'd be fighting Diesel, he'd work the leg. You know, somebody with Michaels, he could keep up with the athleticism. When he was feuding with Owen, an epic feud, brother versus brother. And that WrestleMania 10 match is another classic. I mean, you know, that's another thing about Brett. His resume speaks for itself.
Yeah.
There's just classic upon classic upon classic. Brett was, you know, an all-time worker. And even going back even earlier, man, the Hart Foundation is still maybe my favorite tag team of all time, even more than LOD, more than Dudley's. I was a huge fan of the Hart Foundation. So when Brett started breaking off solo and starting having that kind of success, that made me even more of a fan, because I was already invested. And he didn't let me down, man. Brett was awesome.
I mean, and he's another guy that not, you know, overly produced, but his theme music, like, like that, when that hits, I used to get so pumped. I used to love his theme. And then, like, the camera would zoom in on him coming out, the leather jacket. You know, he's another one that he has moments I remember, like, that people usually forget. And it's different than, say, CM Punk, where CM Punk's moments were, you know, often promo-related, though he had a lot of wrestling. His moments that I remember big time were wrestling-related. And not saying something as, like, a 12-year-old, 13-year-old at the time, like, I remember these wrestling moments. One is a lot of oft-forgotten-about match is, I think it was, like, an episode of maybe Wrestling Superstars, Wrestling Challenge, one of those Saturday morning or Sunday morning shows. Him and 1-2-3 Kid tearing the house down.
That was on Monday Night Raw for the title, and I remember
was it Raw? So okay.
Yeah, and it was one of those early Raws, and I remember it being so strange that 1-2-3 Kid was getting a shot at the world title on Monday Night Raw. That never happened, and you're right. They tore the house down,
he can, that's the thing. He can do those things. He can have those matches with anybody. Like, another one is a lot of people forget, like, Razor Ramon's early introductions into the into wrestling was as a bad guy, and he feuded with Brett for title in really good matches. You know, he helped to introduce guys, either foreign or former stars, and that I had not known about, and he had brought them to the forefront again. One is Hakushi. Like, I had not known about Hakushi in Japan. I didn't know nothing of Japanese wrestling. He comes into the WWE with his crazy, you know, calligraphy-looking writing all over his body and all that kind of craziness.
And that's another, you know, theme song that wasn't overproduced but still awesome theme song. I loved Hakushi's theme.
Yeah, I mean, but they had crazy matches. Like, he helped to introduce a style with a Japanese style and more of an aerial style that wasn't prevalent on WWE TV as much at that time, having amazing matches. Another one was he was there to fight Lawler, you know, Lawler was well past his prime to make him still relevant. And he's another one that they had a great feud and a really good match tied in with Owen was Bob Backlund. They brought Bob Backlund's old booty back, and they had a great feud that Backlund introduced the crossface chicken wing, which scared the hell out of me because, you know, that was like the one thing that was like Brett's kryptonite. That was like a move he couldn't get out of because he can get out of every move. And I still remember to this day the throw in the towel match with him and Backlund, with Owen in Backlund's corner, Bruce Bulldog in Brett's corner, the whole thing where Owen fake cries to his parents to get his mother to throw in Brett's towel when he's in a crossface and Brett is in a crossface and he wouldn't give up. Because if anybody out there is listening to this, if you got a crossface chicken wing putting on you, that thing hurts. So I'm like, I felt for Brett. I was like, oh, man,
You know, we've all tried it.
Yeah. So he's in that crossface like 5 minutes, you know. You know, those kind of moments I remember like it was yesterday. He had, you know, him getting attacked by Diesel and Diesel powerbombing him like three times. Like, oh, man, you know.
Yeah, but Brett had that gift where you would be invested in his matches, man. Even later on when he turned heel and was feuding with Austin, didn't think he, you know, that famous double turn at WrestleMania 13 is legendary. And, you know, Brett being a babyface for so long, didn't think he could pull it off as a heel, and he pulled it off great, man. Yeah. He was a great foil for Austin, man. And even for like Shawn Michaels when they had that little feud leading into Survivor Series, famously, yeah, Brett was aces all around.
I mean, and his the end of his career is remembered more negatively because he has historic negative moments, like Montreal and you know the disappointing WCW run and like
the concussion with Goldberg.
Yeah, unfortunately. But even then, he still has so many massive moments. Like another moment I remember clearly, and it was cool to me, but at the time, a lot of people probably didn't love it. But it was still cool. I loved the reformation of the NWO when he was a leader. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that didn't last long, but that was if they would have ran with that, that was a cool little.
Hall, Nash, and Jeff Jarrett. I think maybe Scott Steiner was in it too. Like that was like a bad ASS team. Like that was like, wow, this is gonna be a sick NWO. And you know, it was WCW. It was gone by like 3 weeks later. But
of course, of the many iterations of the NWO that they tried, that was maybe the coolest one aside from the original, of course.
Well, I mean, I would put Wolfpack number two.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Another one with a theme song that I used to love, too.
Yeah, you know, I forgot about, yeah. I was thinking of later on Wolfpack when, you know, everybody and their mother was involved, but but you're right, you're absolutely right.
I think some people's mothers were actually in the Wolfpack too, which is great.
Judy Bagwell, we're calling you. Good Lord, WCW.
Oh, my God, Judy Bagwell reference. I haven't heard that name in a long time. Oh, my God. Yeah.
That just strikes fear into the hearts and souls of all wrestling fans.
But I'm glad that we had the same number one. I mean, he was just an amazing. Just he was like the good guy that like the girls and the guys both kind of like, you know, just is so awesome. You know, the end of he was like the last, you know, refuge of an era that's like long gone, but. You know, he was, you know, the champion of a time where wrestling was more in a valley instead of a peak, but he was still the man, you know, held the belt, you know, did the hard work, was the workhorse, all those kind of classic things are just unbelievable. I mean, but, you know, aside from that, who did you have actually on your honorable mentions?
For my honorable mentions, I had Hogan. Can't front. Hogan was, you know, the biggest star of one of the biggest eras, and I was a fan.
Yeah.
I had Undertaker. Undertaker was an absolute legend. Had Taz. I wanted to get ECW mentioned in here, and of all the ECW guys, Taz and Rob Van Dam were probably the two that really did it for me during ECW's peak.
Taz, I actually had an unhealthy, you know, a love for Taz. Because what's weird is that Taz, I didn't really follow a ton in ECW. I followed it towards the end before he left, but I had, like, this love of him because once I researched him, like, he's from New York. He's little. You know, again, I love the little guys. And, I was there for his debut in the Garden, one of the few wrestlers I've ever been to. You know, so, he was one of those guys that I got invested in, and it was such a disappointment, not his fault. But, it was so deep, my love of Taz, in that small period of time that I had the orange glasses, I had, like, the little, what's that, the Dickies shirt that they had of his, the black shirt.
Oh, yeah, with the
Taz
the
regular
t-shirt.
Oh, my, I was an unhealthy love of Taz at one time, but
yeah, you were a fan, and rightfully so, man. Taz in his peak was that dude, and I wish he would have gotten a better run in WWE, but in ECW, he was the man.
Yeah,
and
he was a wrecking ball, man.
Oh, yeah, you know, love Taz in his peak. I want to throw a tag team in there and throw in Legion of Doom. Legion of Doom, I thought were really cool in their heyday. They had a look like nobody else, and, you know, still highly regarded. And Mr. Perfect. Mr. Perfect was a really early on.
Oh my god, those promos are still some of the best ever.
Yes, all those vignettes with the athletes, you know, that's not great. That's perfect.
Yes.
Love it, love it. But those were, and you know, I'll throw in from the recent era, two cats that really stood out for me were Edge and Randy Orton. I think Randy Orton's really underrated in terms of how good he's been for so long, almost as good as Cena. And Edge was just, you know, he's a, kind of a dude where, like Bret Hart, where I was really invested early on and glad to see the success that he got later on in his career. So,
yeah, I also, just like you, I had Undertaker, I had Hogan. I mean, Undertaker I was close to putting on because he was, like, right at that period with Bret. Like, he was my number two, you know, with Bret at that time. I mean, Hogan, yeah, it was too easy to put Hogan for me, you know, and it was just because he was the main thing. So when I got into it, everybody liked, you know, Hulk Hogan. So it wasn't special to like him for me when in hindsight. Some of the other ones that you didn't have that I had was this a tag team too, similar to Coco Beware, again, fan, kid friendly, and they had a pet. Always love the pets.
Oh, yes, I think I know where you're going
with
this.
The British
one.
Bulldogs, baby.
Yes, super cool team.
I love the British Bulldog. I love Dave Boy. Loved, again, Dynamite Kid, little guy. Loved little guys. I was a big fan.
Dynamite's another one that's hugely influential. If you ask a lot of cats who was an influence kind of during that term, yeah, that Dynamite was awesome, man. And I don't know if you've seen any of his Japan stuff against, like, Tiger Mask. Oh,
I've heard about it, but I've never sat down to actually watch it.
Oh, that's worth looking up, man. You'll see definitely shades of what we see now. You'll see that back then. And that was in the 80s, so that was amazing to see.
I mean, those kind of things, like, it's funny. WWE is, again, it was so kid friendly. Had things like that. They had, you know, Frankie the Parrot. They had Matilda the Dog. They even had, you know, Damien the Snake. You know, they had animals and pets. You know, all those kind of pet mascots. Where I used to love. That's why I loved it back then. Another guy I had on my, you know, honorable mentions was the man who made me so angry back in, like, 1994 with that Iron Man match with Shawn Michaels. I hated Shawn Michaels. I hated Shawn Michaels. Like, I didn't like him. I didn't want to be a sexy boy. I didn't want to do that. I didn't like any of that stuff. And that it took me for him to retire, you know, retire way earlier than he should have with the back injury. When he came back and had that match with Triple H, and the way, again, he was a guy, like, again, nuances. You know, he's coming back, but he's not a wrestler. He's coming back for a fight. So he's got the cowboy boots on, the jeans on in this return match. You know, those little things. And I told Borden, I was on the edge of my seat. Like, anytime Triple H hit a back, a backdrop on him, I was like, oh, no, he's going to hurt, you know.
You're right on that. And, yeah, you know, Sean, I forgot to mention him, but he was another honorable mention for me. And you talk about, his comeback. There was a nice little run there, I think, of 8 years in a row where, you know, Pro Wrestling Illustrated had their match of the year. Mm-hmm. Sean was involved with the match of the year, I think, like 8 years in a row. according to fan vote. So that goes to show how awesome this dude was in the ring.
And
man.
Is this it? What, his first run or his second run?
His second run.
Yeah, yeah. That's amazing. That's why I appreciated him, because in his first run, he was just, the opposite of, like, I would say, CM Punk, where this guy's a physically gifted, amazing. I used to sell what he can fly around and do in the ring. Like, he was just so gifted. But then when he came back and he was an older man and had to be more careful with his back, that's when I really appreciate what he can do. Like, you know, some of the matches he had, like the feud with Chris Jericho was amazing. He had great matches with John Cena. Never forget him landing the super kick while Shelton Benjamin is trying to springboard into the ring.
Oh man, that's maybe the best. That's the equivalent of an RKO out of nowhere.
Yeah,
man.
Like, he had unbelievable match with Triple H. Their feud and his return was amazing. You know, the Ric Flair stuff. He fought like Rob Van Dam once or twice.
The match with Kurt Angle at WrestleMania 21 is another.
Oh my god!
One that doesn't get talked about enough. That's a classic match.
Yes, I mean, those are ones I forgot about because it's overshadowed mostly by his back to back with the Undertaker, which those are unbelievable. You know, he had some of his greatest matches at the end of his career, and that's what blew my mind. You know, he would be on my top five if I didn't hate him so much back in the day, but. Like, he almost made my top five just from the awesomeness of his second run. But also a guy, to add my last honorable mention, that he was a guy that blew my mind. Like, I never seen anything like it before. Also, if we're looking at a trend here, little guy.
Uh-oh. Another think you had a little bit of a thing.
I mean, he blew my mind. Like, the fact that he became a WWE champion is still amazing to me. But Rey Mysterio.
Yeah, that's a good mention.
Unbelievable!
Man.
Like, I remember when I first started watching WCW, seeing some of the stuff he did. I was like, I never saw anything like that. The speed and like, and not only was he fast, he was fluid. Like, he made it look so easy compared to a guy like Sin Cara, who just looks clunky. Either version of Sin Cara, either one. Like, he just makes it so fluid. His speed in and out of the ring for a small guy. You know, him becoming champion in WWE is just it blows my mind. It's still amazing that he reached that peak. And that height, but and I still, again, a similar thing to CM Punk, Kudrago, I still love that he's a change his look. You know, every pay-per-view, he had, like, a new thing. Like, I remember he had the Spider-Man outfit, or he had, like, a Riddler outfit in WWE. Like, he's a change his gear. I still love that, you know, but he was amazing, too, just groundbreaking, never-before-seen kind of stuff in America, what he used to do.
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. You know, the same way that Brian Pillman and Jushin Liger kind of introduced me to the high-flying style, when Mysterio came in, he took it to, like, the next level. I'll never forget when WCW used to have the War Games, which, you know, is a match that WWE needs to bring back. I love War Games.
Yes.
They had the two rings set up, of course, for the two ring steel cage. Mysterio had a match against, I think, like Super Calo or one of them, you know, luchadors that WCW had. One of the many. And he did a springboard where he went to the top rope, did a backflip to the second ring, jumped on the first rope, jumped on the second rope, jumped on Super Calo, did a Hurricane Rana and pinned him. My jaw was on the ground. And Rey Mysterio just had plenty of moments like that, man.
Like, there's no one that's even, like, a guy like Kalisto is close to him, but even he can't hit, like, you can see just Rey Mysterio doing stuff, like, with his eyes closed in his sleep. Like, he just made it look so easy, really, really hard stuff. And, you know, even late in his career, like, even when he started having injuries, he had to slow down a little bit. He was still so amazing, and he can tell a story. He was another one that, despite his style that was all high spots and high energy and fast, 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 he could tell his fun story, too, and be the small guy and, you know, the underdog. He was a classic underdog.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Mysterio, you'd get emotionally invested in this matches, man, for sure.
But, I mean, I had a fun time doing this list. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, this was a blast, man. Always great, you know, talking wrestling with you, and especially stuff like this, you know, kind of our formative years into becoming wrestling fans. This is a blast, brother.
Yeah, nah, I enjoyed it. So we want to wrap it up here. You want to, you know, have any final thoughts, you know, send the people away with?
I think we're good, man. I think, you know, it's an exciting time to kind of be a wrestling fan. If you look at what's going on with the Royal Rumble coming up, Goldberg and Lesnar being in there. Cena's about to come back. Owens is still champ. We'll see on Sunday.
Yeah, for how long?
for how long? AJ Styles is on top in SmackDown.
For how long?
You know, Mania season's coming up, so there's bound to be some changes. Some we might approve of, some we might not. But regardless,
No, it's exciting stuff going on there, man.
And as unhappy as we might be knowing the possible AJ and Kevin Owens reigns are ending, that's why we have moments like this and we do this. So we can appreciate the good times and the good memories we have and be warmed in our heart and soul by those, even though something will happen that'll let us down soon. Yeah, but
absolutely. We got to keep the positive vibes going. But, of course. Yeah, that's why we do what we do, man. So, yeah, I mean, thanks for listening, guys. You can always reach us, of course, on our usual channels. You can reach me at Stickman Cinema at Twitter. Jay, your Twitter is at Cheap Seats.
Yep, Cheap Seats Chat.
Cheap Seats Chat. And, of course, yeah, you can check out many of Jay's articles on various websites. The dude is bussing it out, man. Get out there and look at this dude. This dude's doing great things in the MMA world, so... So keep an eye out for Jason Burgos, man. This dude is up and coming.
MMASucker.com, name drop. There you go.
Oh, there you go, my man. And, yeah, I think that's a wrap, man. You know, thanks, you guys, for listening. And we will catch you guys on the flip side.
Peace.